This is Ali Ciardo, and this is Photo Field Notes, stories and inspiration from professional photographers. My interview today is with Jonathan Canlis. Jonathan exclusively shoots film, and he's really built an incredible business in life doing it. And because he's also an amazing person in general, Jonathan is hooking listeners up with a 40% discount off his business guide and family guide when you use the code PFN. So that will be up for the next week. Today is July 8th, 2015. All right, I started in on these guides last week, and they're fun to read, and they're completely filled with information that will seriously, it will change your business and it will change your life. I am basically giddy about these. So I'll put the links to the guides under the resources page on photofieldnotes.com and also in the show notes for this interview. Let's jump in. This is Ali Ciardo. I'm here with Jonathan Canlis out of Oahu, Hawaii. And Jonathan, you have, I think, a really interesting story. Let's hear how you became a photographer. Tell me your whole story.
Yeah, so I actually got into photography while living in Japan. I was serving a Mormon mission in Tokyo. And I'm there for like service and like doing missionary activities. So I'm not there to like learn photography. But this is like circa 1995. So like my mom had sent me with this like flip up Kodak camera that comes with two awesome little rolls of Kodak film, like in this, it's like $30 and I can see it in like the Kmart aisle. Right. And whatever, bless my mom's heart. That's what she bought me. It's fine. Like I wasn't doing anything professional. It's like, here's me at Mount Fuji, you know, like selfies in 1995, right? Here's me in a train full of like Japanese people with black hair that come up to my chest and my head's popping above everyone else because I'm taller. You know, nothing like professional, nothing serious. Well, during rainy season, which literally is like monsoon, it's like we're riding our bikes and I am just soaking wet. No one told me there was rainy season, so I'm soaking wet. My camera's in my pocket. It gets ruined. And so a friend of mine lent me like a Canon AE-1 with a 50mm 1.4 lens on it. And I just kind of went to town. I didn't know anything about photography, f-stops, shutter speeds. That was all beyond me. I knew there were all these numbers on there, like 22. I was like, what is that? When I turn 22, I put it on 22? I had no idea. So I set it on A, which is what my friend who lent the camera to me what to do. And, you know, A for me is A. A is awesome. Awesome. So I'm shooting in like low light situations because obviously I know nothing about light. I know nothing about composure, like composition or anything. So everything's coming back looking amazing because it's like shot at 1.4. And like it's all this like bokeh-licious, like awesome stuff. And I'm like, wow, I'm really good at this. But then I go out during the day and try and shoot. And it's like, oh, wow, it's like defaulting to F8 and everything looks like crap and I don't understand. Yada, yada, yada. So I came home from Japan December 96, moved to Provo, Utah, where I went to college for Brigham Young University. I majored in Japanese and Asian studies, but like had the camera. I actually sent it back to a friend, and then the next, I think I was without a camera for like 6 months. And then I broke down and got a Pentax KX, which is like the Pentax equivalent of the Canon AE-1, again with another 50mm 1.4. And just tried to, you know, teach myself. Like I would just shoot what was around me, what I was doing. And 4.5 years into college, so this is like, well, no, I mean, it's less than that. I'd already been, so I'm in a college town. So like there's a lot of kids getting married. So people find out like, you know, in your apartment complex, hey, this guy takes photos. Hey, would you do our engagement photos? Which led to, hey, will you shoot my wedding? Which led to now like a 16-year career in shooting weddings. You know? Right. I mean, I never woke up one day and said like, man, I love brides and I hate Saturdays. So let's shoot weddings. You know, it just kind of happened. Don't get me wrong. I love what I do. But that's kind of how I got, I guess, cut my teeth in photography, was shooting weddings.
This was while you were still in college that you started.
Man, I graduated in 2004, and I think the year that I graduated, I was shooting like 30 weddings a year.
And so you were always shooting film. Did you ever get on the digital bandwagon?
I attempted to convert three times, and each time was like literally kicking against the pricks or like banging my head against a really hard stone. It's not that I didn't understand it. It was just, it was like adding so much work to me, you know, because like with a lab, I basically have an editing team for me. Yeah, I mean, I expose my film a specific way. I use specific cameras and specific film stocks. Send it to my lab. We've already opened a dialogue. This is how I like it. So when I get my stuff back, it's minimal effort. Where with digital, it was like, okay, so even though I put this color balance in, like there's this color shifts here, nothing looks great out of camera. Like I can't just go. Like there's going to be a lot of definite time behind a camera, or sorry, not behind a camera, behind a computer, trying to make my stuff look like film when I could just shoot film.
So do you think it's a lot, obviously, about knowing what you're doing when you're taking the pictures? There's less room for error. You can't necessarily see things like blinks or things, you know, how it's coming out in the end. So talk to me a little bit about that. Does it feel a little bit more, I don't know, to me it feels so much more adventurous because I can't be like, oh, you blinked, let's take it again, you know? How does that feel when you're shooting a wedding and you have to put in the new film and, you know, it just adds a whole other element to what you're doing?
It is a whole other element, and the thing is, I don't know any better. So, like, you know, I mean, this is all I've done, this is all I do. And, like, when I take photos, it's definitely a different mentality of the spray and pray, which is really found a lot in digital photography. Like when I take a photo, like of say we're at the wedding and we've got like the bride's family all together, I'm only going to take maybe 3-4 shots. I mean, and that to me, that's excessive. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like if I didn't get it in the first two, like the next ones, I'm just like, well, I just didn't trust myself. Do you know what I mean? Or like if I come up and I'm going to take a portrait or like an individual portrait of someone, I take one and I move on. Like I'm not, I think it makes me more aware as a photographer. I'm definitely always aware of what's inside my frame, what's going on inside my frame. And I think I'm thinking a lot more than if I was shooting digital. I mean, I've even experienced this. You put a digital camera in my hand and like all my discipline goes out the window. I go from taking like one to like, oh, watch this.
Right. And you do see that a lot. Like they're like, tick, 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 tick.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I think what's wrong with that is the idea that now I've just created way more work for myself because I have to go through and cull that now. Now, which of those 500 images of that sequence is the good one, right? Yeah. And then I have to edit it to make it look like the way I want. It's just, it's not my...
Okay, but wait, but what about now photographing families? When I'm photographing families, sometimes you have the kids who are just like, rah! And you know, you're trying to get that natural moment and they're kind of running around and they're doing a lot of things. It depends, you know, if it's lifestyle, if they're looking for smiles, whatever, it's expectations, obviously. But do you do that differently? You know, are you still just taking one? Are you taking more?
I'll take a couple, but like, let's just, for example, I just uploaded a family session to my proofing site, delivered it to the clients and everything. Now, my family session's about an hour, and they had three kids in this one, and they're pretty goofy running around and doing their thing. But like, I mean, I only shoot maybe tops 150 images, and that to me is like a lot. And like, so that's what I shoot. And then I deliver about maybe a third to maybe half of that.
Yeah, so it still works out for you. So it's yeah. The same. It's the same theory where you're thinking it through and you're.
Oh yeah, I'm very deliberate because you got to realize every time I click that shutter, that's money.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So like, I mean, I wish digital cameras were like almost like pay to play kind of thing, you know, like every time you hit a shutter, they're going to just charge a card that's on file. I think people would get a lot better if that was the case, you know?
That's so true. I mean, I think that's generally the respect of people who shoot film is that you respect that they absolutely must know what they're doing. You see, it's not these people who are necessarily just picking up cameras and they're like, oh, cool, you know, let's put it on A, et cetera. So,
I mean, I again, there's nothing wrong with that. I don't think there's anything wrong with digital photography in any mm-hmm. sense of the word. Like, there are some things that digital photography can do that can blow film out of the water. Like, low light situations, you've got us a toast. Like, you guys can crank it all the way up to whatever gazillion ISO and shoot in pitch black where I'm like, that's not happening.
Well, that's the biggest thing. And I'll be completely honest. Film completely intimidates me. I love to be able to just, like, knock that ISO whichever way I need to knock it, you know, if I'm in the reception, et cetera. So I'm fascinated by the fact that you do it. I think it's beautiful, obviously. But to me, very intimidating. So I think that's why other people, and I also think there's, it's an interesting movement. I'm kind of curious to hear your thoughts on this. So you started shooting when film was pretty much like, that was it. You shot film and you shot film. And then digital kind of had its movement and people shifted toward digital. And then, you know, it was more, the barriers kind of came down a little bit in terms of just people being able to shoot photography and improve in photography and get their instant photos back. And you continued to shoot film. And now there's a little bit, it feels to me, a little bit of this movement back toward film and just kind of the quality of the photos and the art that comes with it. And you see this kind of subset of film shooters. So what's that like for you, kind of being in film all along the way and observing those trends?
I mean, it doesn't really affect me. It makes me happy, obviously, because it's going to make film last longer.
Right.
I think what happened was when digital photography came in, it kind of like blew the lid off of everything. So like what was standard accepted correct color and or density is now open to a gazillion different interpretations due to action. You know, I mean, there was a point where people were delivering piss yellow skies and that was accessible. You know, I mean, like acceptable. Do you know what I mean? Like the one thing I love about film is that it really leans toward like just straightforward, honest color and density. So that when I take these photos and I edit them correctly, like the way I would assume that they would, I want realistic, right? So when I go back to my work, say 5-6 years ago, I'm not like, you know, hiding my face thinking,
yeah, it's consistent.
Oh, well, that was trendy. Like that was cool, but let's just re-edit this real quick. Do you know what I mean? Like my images are going to look, I'm not saying timeless, but like there's no like crutch to them to make them look the way they should other than the fact that it's shot on film. Correct color, correct density. The only thing that's going to really date it are like their clothes and maybe like whatever's in the scenery. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I'm totally guilty of that where I look back 5 years and I'm like, oh, the textures were so in. I'm going to.
Yeah. It totally had its place. And like, do you know what I mean? In terms of like running a sound business, like there's things that people want and you've got to adjust to it. And but at the same time, like with film, I'm not really running actions or textures over my film, you know? So
what does, and so have you been with a lab consistently over the years, or as the trends have changed, have you had to shift at all with the labs that you're working with?
Yeah. So, I've been with basically two labs. Well, I've been with, if you want to start from the way beginning, I started with this lab in Provo called Campus Photo, which was just south of BYU. They closed their doors and I bought their equipment because, I'm shooting so much film, so it makes sense to have my own developer and own scanner. For a handful of years, I used Richard Photo Lab in LA. And then I basically opened, I don't know if you know this, I own my own lab now.
Okay, I didn't realize, I didn't see that when I was looking at your information.
So there's a lab in Utah called the Find Lab. So what went from me owning my own little rinky-dink scanner and developer has now full-blown, like, you know, a lab that's internationally known called the Find Lab. So
you are able to basically incorporate that in your entire workflow with your own lab. Well, that's awesome. Can you tell me a little bit then what that workflow looks like for those who don't shoot film, you know, from prepping, let's say for a wedding or a session to delivering the images, just briefly walk me through how that looks as a film shooter.
Okay. So prepping for a wedding, it's making like going through and making sure I have all the right film that I want and the right amount of increments. And like, I always like err on the side of having too much because there's nothing worse than showing up and you're like, oh, I'm out, but we got like 2 hours left. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's just bananas. So I always overpack film and I try and stick with one film stock. The reason being is it's such a one, I want consistency in my look. And if I'm shooting different film stocks, I don't care what the lab does. They're going to have different nuances. You have to look at film stocks as like paintings, in the fact that like with a painter, like you start with a base color, right? And then you build on top of that. And each film stock has a different base color, if that makes sense. So I've got my different film stocks. I've got all my cameras, charging my batteries here and there. But I mean, for me to prep, it's maybe 30 minutes. I don't know. It's not, it's me sitting down with my kids and then fighting over who's opening the film and throwing away the garbage. once the wedding's done, come back. I always have like the numbers in and numbers out. So like if I walk out with 45 rolls, I make sure I come back with 45 rolls, if that makes sense. put all that in a Ziploc bag, print out an order form, send it in a flat rate box via USPS to the Fine Lab in Utah. And then I get this wonderful thing called a break. Like, I don't have to come home after your wedding, download your images and stare at your face, and then like build up this like animosity towards you because like I've already put in 12 hours and I got to look at you even more. Like, it's awesome. I get this amazing break. And then, you know, 10 business days later, I get an email saying, hey, your scans are ready for download. Download the scans. They come in folders. So like, say if I sent in 40 rolls, it's gonna be like roll one, roll two, roll three, all in folders, right? Download everything. I think the most time consuming part for me is culling. So I'll just put everything into the folders that I'm going to present to the client, which would be like bride and groom, cake cutting, ceremony, dancing, guests, families, yada, 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 right? Go through cull. My cull process is threefold in the fact that I'll go through, once I've got all my folders, put everything into one big massive folder, then put them into the subcategories, right? Once it's in there, I'll cull it once. It means I go through and I delete anything that I don't want. And when I say I delete it, I literally put it in the trash and I empty the trash. It doesn't exist in a folder called maybe.
It's gone forever.
It's gone forever. You're only as good as the crappiest photo you ever show, and I don't ever want to show you any of my crappy photos because I want you to leave. Do you believe that I'm amazing? So move on. So I do that twice, right? I go through and I cull it twice. Then I get up and like walk away, use the bathroom, change a diaper, whatever. I've got six kids, so there's always something to do. Then come back with like fresh eyes and then cull it one more time, and that's done. Once that folder is done, I'm now uploading that to my proofing site, which is Instaproofs, and I move to this next folder and repeat. Now, 9 times out of 10 when I get my stuff back from my lab, I don't really have to do much to it. And when I say much, like if I'm editing more than 5 seconds, I'm pissed. Because somebody did something wrong, and it's usually not me. So, like, my editing time for, an 8-hour wedding is maybe, an hour.
So what kind of edits are you making at that point? Would that be cosmetic things, like, if there was a skin issue, or is that something with actual...
I don't ever do that.
You don't do that? Okay. So that's like, what I wonder.
Straightening horizons, or, like...
Okay, crops.
Well, like, I'll get, a negative area, you know, like, because, like, there'll be, a black... area like they might have missed, or if I have to do actual adjustments, it's levels, curves, color balance in that order. But it's again super super simple. It's nothing like for me to edit a wedding with the culling, uploading, archiving, emailing the client for a wedding that's 6 to 8 hours tops is 2.5 to 3 hours.
Nice. So most of the work is done. So it really is. It's getting it right in camera, and then the lab takes care of the rest from there. All right, but let's go back to the wedding itself. So let's say you have 45, you're using 45 rolls of film. Do you have somebody who's helping you then, who's always
there? Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, right.
So I'm a firm believer in assistance, and I'm a firm believer in that second shooters don't exist. So let me expand. So up until recently, I'd say within the 6 months, no matter what, I always have one assistant. Now I have two.
But just assisting, just with
Straight up, just holding bags, loading film, doing little dances, making time go faster. Like, they do not, so to me, second shooters are like unicorns. I know they exist, but I've never seen one.
So you've never worked with a second shooter who actually shoots?
Well, one, because if you hire me, you're hiring for the work that I've done. Like, everything you see on my site has all been me, right? And I don't want to deliver my clients... 20 okay photos and then muddying my brand. Do you know what I mean? Why am I going to give you a handful of mediocrity when I can just do it all myself?
And how many photos do you usually deliver for a wedding? Is there any set number? It's just whatever kind of comes
out. It's not a set number. It depends on what's happening and what's not happening. Let me just look at my most recent wedding that I delivered. It was 6 hours of coverage. And I delivered, sorry, let me scroll down to this, 498.
Nice.
But then there was another wedding where it was the same amount of coverage and it was 769. So it just depends on what's happening and what's not, you know?
Yeah.
And not that I'm saying the lower one has not much happening, but you know what I'm saying?
No, that makes sense.
In case those clients are listening.
No, not totally. And I'm the same. And that's why it's kind of it's a hard question to answer, but... You know, if you're
so I tell the clients bare minimum for 6 hours, they give me 400 images, no matter what.
Yeah. Okay. So All right, here's another question for you. Are you shooting mostly natural light, or are you also bringing in some other light?
I'll bring in flash if I have to, but I'm not shooting flash during the day. Mm-hmm. Like, if I have natural light, I'm going to shoot in natural light. But, like, if like, so towards reception where the light is gone, I'm rocking flashes and video lights, no question asked.
Yeah, so then it's just completely knowing. Are you using, like, a light meter to make sure that everything's set before you go?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, because that's something where I feel like I think that to me would be the most intimidating portion, because I use off-camera flash and I flash on my camera, and every now and then, like, the pocket wizard will misfire and it's dark, and then you're like, well, there's money gone because you're using film, and there's, you know, with things that don't go. So I'm
there,
sure
there are mistakes happen with film. I'm not saying it's perfect, but I don't know. I do enough that I'm covering my bases. So
yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's move into teaching, because you do a lot of teaching now too. How did you get into that?
Okay. So let me just correct. I don't do any teaching anymore.
Oh, you don't do it. Okay. So you were doing teaching.
I've been doing workshops nonstop once a month for the last like 4 years.
So now you're back to just focusing on your lab and your shooting.
Yeah. And that wasn't because like I wanted, like, there weren't people, like, I'm still getting emails like, hey, when's the next Film Is Not Dead workshop? So the workshop that I did was called Film Is Not Dead, where I teach everyone everything I know about film and anything I know about my business and how I've got to where I'm at, right? But the fact of having six kids, you know, it just kind of wore on the whole idea of, like, I want to be the dad and husband I want to be, and I don't want to be gone all that often.
Yeah, and you were traveling for that.
Yeah, like, you have to realize, like, I mean, I'm doing workshops in Madrid, Berlin, all over the United States, Australia, like, it was awesome. No, I'm not complaining in any sense of the word, but it was time for me to hang up my hat.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's one of those things where travel can be really fun for a while, and then eventually you're just like, okay, let's be home.
Yeah, like, I'll see, like, on Facebook, someone's like, oh, I've got this wedding in New Zealand, anybody want to go? And my first thought is like, no, I don't want to go to New Zealand. And no, I don't. I just don't. It's too far away.
No, I get that. Well, maybe not New Zealand, if you've never been. But if you've been,
I've been there. I've been to New Zealand. I've did it. It's okay. I don't know. If I was going on vacation, yeah, you want to pay me going on vacation? I'll totally go.
Yeah, but if you're working.
I, as someone who's based his whole business on travel, like, so I live in Haula, which is the north shore of Oahu, about an hour away from Honolulu. We moved here a little over 2 years ago. Before that, I was in Utah. And my whole business, I mean, I lived in Utah, but, you know, 90, 85% of my work was all out of state, you know? And now that I've moved here, I've been able to book way more work locally and not have to travel. So I had taken a big break from weddings. I actually stopped shooting weddings in 2012.
As part of your moving to Hawaii?
No, I had no idea we were moving to Hawaii at this time. I was just done.
Okay.
I was burned out. Burned out. I was like, I'm done. So I took about a 9-month break, and so during that 9 months we moved here, and I started booking weddings where I could like go shoot the wedding and come home that night, which just was not in my vernacular. So I was like, dude, I love everything about Hawaii. So people that are coming to get married in Hawaii, they also share that sentiment, which is amazing to me. And then I get to come home that night. I'm all about it. So
was Hawaii, what took you to Hawaii?
So I went to high school here, back in the day, and there's a Hanai family. So, like my adopted family lives here. It was always the goal to move back here. I work all year to bring my family here once out of the year, sometimes twice, depending. But, I was here in March of 2013 on business. I was like shooting some stuff for a Kickstarter campaign that I was a part of. And literally shooting on the road that we moved on with no intentions of moving here. Got home like March 15th, and we had moved by April 30th.
Wow. So it happened fast.
So a house came up on the market, and it was here, and I wasn't going to fly back to look at it. So I had a friend just like FaceTime it.
Wow.
And I was like, well, looks great. We put the bid in. That day, they accepted it. Our house isn't even on the market. We put the house on the market, and we were out. That's it.
Wow. And so it wasn't like you were like, oh, maybe I'll move there, and then I'll shoot weddings as people are there, and then I'll stay. But it worked out that way.
No. And it was great because, again, my business was built on something that was – I could work remotely from anywhere. It didn't matter. Like, if I moved from Utah, I wasn't missing on all these clients. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was people all over the nation or even worldwide that were hiring me to do whatever.
And then as you were able to take on more, you could say no to the travel more exactly. and more. Yeah. Okay, last topic I want to cover. Just kind of from a branding perspective, there are two camps. You know, there's the camp that's like, you have to specialize. You have to be one thing, just a wedding photographer, just a family photographer, just, you know, maybe it's commercial, whatever it might be, and you just have to specialize. And then, you know, there are others, and like you and me, who really kind of cover a couple of different areas and maybe separate it out in how you reach those target markets. So you kind of put yourself out as wedding and family, and then separately you have commercial work. How do you feel? What's your thought on that, kind of those two camps and where you fall and how you balance it with your clients?
Okay. Can I speak bluntly?
Totally.
The camp of putting all of your eggs in one basket is stupid. Because, okay, let me explain my thought. Like, because you asked me at the beginning of this interview if there's one thing that I would recommend to photographers getting into whatever that they're doing. My biggest recommendation is diversify your bonds. Like, you can't, okay, so let's back up. Let's say weddings. So I will be 40 in October. Okay. I'm not the most fittest guy. Like, I lift weights, but like, I'm not running marathons and stuff. So there's that aspect. And also the aspect of, in my opinion, men have a shorter wedding photography career than women. Because at one point, the fact that I have this like long hair or whatever, I'm gonna become the creepy dude. I'm like, hey, like this, and they're like, "Oh, he's creepy." Where, if you're a woman, no matter what, you're not creepy. Like, you ask women to do whatever poses, whatever, it's fine. You're a lady. Where I'm like, hey, you know, do you know what I mean? And I don't know about you. I don't know many people that are shooting weddings in their 50s that are, and I don't mean to offend anyone that is listening to this. And I'd actually be really curious if you know people that are shooting weddings in their 50s and are relevant.
Yeah, but it is, it's a very physical job.
It is a physical job, but like, I just don't, like, there's a point where there's a disconnect. I'm no longer connecting with kids that are like, oh, like, I'm like, I'm now that old ratchet guy, like, get right. in here, turn your music down, it's too loud.
Right, good point, yeah. And whereas, yeah, like, for me right now, I already sense myself getting older than a lot of my brides, but I can still relate on that, like, oh yeah, I was recently married, that all makes sense. But yeah, you're right, when you get to the point where you could be the person's parent that's getting married, it's probably a different relationship.
You know, and the other thing is that, like, I don't know. Like, I love the idea of diversifying, because now I'm not just stuck doing the same thing over and over and over again. Do you know what I mean? And I think shooting weddings and transitioning into families is something that I think every photographer should do naturally. Do you know what I mean? Because wedding photography is, in my opinion, like six genres of photography mixed into one. Like, you have to be able to do editorial portraiture, traditional portraiture, fine art, photojournalism, travel, and... what did I say? So editorial, traditional, travel, I don't know. There's six. I can't think of them off the top of my head. Anyway, but if you can do any of the, like, if you can do wedding photography well, you can do those six genres. And, oh, lifestyle. That's the other one. Sorry, lifestyle. Yeah. So lifestyle, editorial portraiture, traditional portraiture, travel, fine art, and photojournalism, right? As what I call a good and relevant wedding photographer, you should be able to do those genres at the drop of a dime. So if you can do those well, it would only make sense that, of course, I'm going to have a family portrait business. You know, it's something I do at weddings already. And from my experience, it's way less effort and way more money than a wedding. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's not the pressure of like, okay, I've got to get this done in 8 hours. I've got an hour. We're going to show up, hang out, shoot a couple things, and we're done.
Yeah. It's really fun for me to hear that, because, you know, for me, I've always thought like, well, why am I going to turn down that work if it's coming in, especially if it is that natural progression? And so I have... even though weddings have been my main kind of bread and butter, I will not turn down that work, and I'll still show that work. So I think it's, you know, it's, they're slightly different target markets, but
this is the thing, is like, somewhere someone in the back of your head is whispering this thing to you. This is what the industry says, we should only do this. Dude, no offense, F that. Like, I don't know who that voice is or who has told us this. Like, it's your business. You can do whatever the hell you want. Do you know what I mean? I don't care if freaking Richard Avedon came up to me and said, you know what, this is unacceptable. You're shooting weddings and families at the same time. Like, you know what? I got six mouths to feed. I don't give a crap what you say. This is my business. I'll do what I want. And if I enjoy doing this, why wouldn't you do it? Do you know what I mean? And this is the other thing. So I'll be straight up. I think I shoot more non-paid gigs than I shoot paid gigs. in the fact that I shoot a ton of personal work on film with the whole intention that whatever I'm shooting, right? So if I'm going to shoot personal work, it's something I'm super passionate about because I'm spending my own money, right? No one's paying this, right? But I'm doing it with the intention of I'm putting it out there because I want someone to basically pay me to do what it is that I love already. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. In my opinion, personal work will lead to the most rewarding professional work because Now someone is giving you money to do something you would have done on your own.
I feel like I could go in so many directions. And yeah, and I think the whole like focus thing, just to kind of go back to that for a second, I think it kind of comes with the rise of a lot of people now teaching branding and they're like, your brand has to be solid. And it has, at the same time, I do think like your brand is your work and your brand is who you are. And that comes out through the personal work and the work that you do, whether that's weddings or families or other areas. So
I just don't understand the disconnect where they don't feel families and weddings go hand in hand.
Right. No, and I do.
Basically doing the exact same thing you do at a wedding without wedding clothes. How is that? I don't know. I don't understand that mentality.
Yeah. Well, I'm with you on that. Okay. Let's do this. Since I think you've kind of already given your advice, you know, I said I normally end with your kind of one piece of advice. I know we've done that. So I don't know if you have an answer to this, but just for fun, let's end with, have you ever had like, what's your worst? I used to work with a guy in Chicago who had started on film and moved to digital. And I always liked hearing his like disaster stories. Do you have any disaster stories where like something's gone terribly wrong and you've recovered from it, or, you know, just like something that's been a terrible disaster.
If anyone ever tells the answer to that is no, they're lying to the freaking teeth.
Do you have a story that's worth sharing?
I have many stories. So let's choose the, let, you know, let's just go let balls out. Let's choose the most damaging one. So I've had my son ruin a wedding in the fact that I shot at, it's a Mormon wedding. So like the ceremony's in the morning, right, at the Salt Lake Temple, and then a reception later that evening. I come home from the temple, go upstairs to my office, left my bag at the bottom of the stairs, ran upstairs to just grab something really quick, right? I don't know. I think I was restocking something because I knew I had time. I had like a 3-hour block. Come down the stairs. My son is unraveling. He had unraveled every single roll of film that I had shot from that morning.
So it was just done.
Done, toast, nothing to do. And let me just explain to you my process and why I did it this way. Because I think this was the appropriate response. I did not tell the bride and groom the day of.
Yeah,
you don't tell them what's going on because, in my opinion, I don't care how happy they are. I've ruined everything.
Right.
I've ruined their wedding. I've ruined their honeymoon. Right. So I rush back to the reception hours early, pump out as much as I could to recover what we did. It's obviously not going to, because it's not at the temple, which means a lot to them, you know?
Right, but to give them more, at least.
Exactly, and then when it was done, I just sent her a simple email. I'd love to sit down with you, invite her over to the studio, explain to her what happened, and told her flat out, whatever it takes to make this right, I'll make it right, because that's what it was, you know?
Was there anything that was saved, or did he literally ruin everything?
Oh, he literally, like, I mean, unraveled the film. The film.
Like,
it's toast.
Everything. It's gone. Done. It's gone. Okay. So what happened?
I ended up making – so I actually had – so if you say none of it was toast, I had a panoramic back for one of my medium format cameras, had 35 millimeter in it. And my son couldn't – you know, open that. He's like and a half years old, you know, like 18 months or whatever. So there were still some shots of the bride and groom, but they were really odd format because it's like 4x9, mm-hmm. right? So I ended up printing like a 16 by 20 – no, wait, 4 – so 16x36 that I ended up matting and framing. So it was this monster print, and then made them an album. Like I told them, I'd refund their money. They didn't want it. So
they had you. So you did a couple of extra things.
Because I did. I really did a good job at the reception. Like I got all the family formals. Redid a lot of the stuff with the bride and groom, but it's just a different location, you know.
Yeah.
And she understood that, and like she even like was like, "Thank you for not telling me the day of, because I would have been." Like, they're not going to recover from that. You know what I mean? So
did you feel good about how it came out in the end?
When it was all, like, we're friends. Like, it's totally fine now. Like, it's laughable. Well, it's not laughable. When she walked away, after I told her, like, she cried.
Of course.
And like, she was fine during the meeting, and she got up, she's like, well, thanks so much, we'll figure it out. And as she's leaving, she's crying. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, what do? You know, like, but again, that's what liability insurance for, yeah, in case that, you know, had she decided to sue or whatever, but like, it's fine. So
do you like keep it in a locked box now? Your children.
I talk about diversifying. I've written PDFs, you know, and in that PDF, like, I straight up, I'm an open book. I got nothing to hide. Like, it's happened. Like, and there's another story where, like, another big photographer hired me. Like, I flew out to Charlotte, did all this stuff, did the family session, and it was an extended family. So it wasn't just her. It was, like, her parents, her siblings, and their kids. Everything turned out fine, except for the group shot. Which, for somehow, I bumped my f-stop from whatever I was supposed to be shooting to some ridiculous, like, stop-down amount. So when they come back, like, everything was great except for the group shot. It's all, like, grainy and stuff. And, like, yeah. So I'm actually going out to Charlotte again later this year in October, just for the sole purpose. I mean, I booked some other stuff around it so that it makes sense to do it.
But you'll do it again.
I'll come out. I'll go out and just shoot. We're just going to get your family together. Couple quick shots, make sure I'm on the right f-stop. And you have to realize, this happened last year.
But these are the stories that make my heart, just make my heart, like, so scary. but you're right, you just have to be so careful.
It's the same thing digitally. Your cards could corrupt, something could happen, you lose a card, you know what I mean? There's it's the same amount of, I guess, like a safe could fall from the sky and land on you, but it's not going to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So generally,
like, risks with film, I think, are the same with digital. So
yeah, well, it's fascinating to me as a digital shooter. You know, I love the look of film. I may sometime dabble in it as a hobby, but it's very scary to me hearing stories like this. But, you know, like you said, these are kind of rare occurrences, and you can lose cards, or your kid could come and, like, flush a card down the toilet or something. Yep. You know, it'd be the same story.
So. Anything. Your kids could pee on your cameras, you're not knowing it. You know? You have no idea.
Yeah.
Like, anything could happen. Yeah. So.
Well, this was really fun. I think I could, like, go on all day and have tons of questions for you. And I love that you're so open about, you know, the ups and the downs and everything. But I think we'll go ahead and stop there with all these great stories, great content for everybody. So, Jonathan, thanks so much for being a part of this interview.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
If you liked this interview, I would love for you to leave a review on iTunes so other people can find it, and be sure to subscribe so that you can get future episodes. Have a good week.